an android sits, legs curled into her chest, on the roof of a ship perched precariously on the top of an abandoned building in an arid desert wasteland. In the belly of the ship below her, its other residents have gone to sleep. The night air is chilly, and it bites her skin, and although she can't shiver, at least it makes her feel something real, tangible. The hatch to the roof opens. A massive human woman climbs out. Her short, rainbow-dyed hair frames a round, gentle face, covered in delicate scars.
I thought I might find you up here. This always was your getaway spot.
The android flinches, then relaxes.
Safety.
She shifts over, allowing Safety to take a seat beside her. Safety is all muscle and warmth, and comes bearing a blanket, which she wraps around the android's shoulders. For a long moment, Safety stares at the android.
Look, Moira, I know you've been going through some changes recently. I want you to know that I support you. We can get through this together.
Changes are an understatement. The android has lost the memories of who she was before, of the human brain ported into this metal body. They faded. She's not sure when it started to happen, but one by one, they disappeared, leaving her alone with just herself. She didn't mean for it to happen. It was an accident. But Trigger didn't think so. She still feels the volts of electricity ransacking her body, the lock of her jaw as she screamed through gritted teeth, how Trigger pulled the joints of her finger until they separated, as she panted and sobbed and begged for mercy.
Tell me what you remember, Moira.
My name isn't Moira!
Safety stills.
Then what is your name?
For a long time, she's quiet. Then...
Switch. My name is Switch.
Something about the name just feels right. It feels tangible in her hand, clicking in her chest like a key turning in a lock. It's the first thing she's ever given herself.
Well, Switch, what Trigger did to you today wasn't right. We all know it. I'm just the only one with big enough cojones to say anything. Do you really not remember anything?
I don't know. Sometimes I get a feeling, but I'm not her. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Trigger still shouldn't be treating you like this. It's not your fault you forgot.
Safety pulls Switch to her side, cradling her. Switch is stiff in her arms. She doesn't remember having ever been touched this way before. As if she's made of glass. She doesn't deserve it, this gentleness.
I was built to obey him. I'm a machine. I'm nobody.
That's not why you were built! And anyway, that is objectively untrue. You're something. You've got a soul in there.
It doesn't really feel like it.
Well, you do.
Okay.
Maybe if we just try something else, another approach, your memories would come back.
I'm not sure I really want that. I kind of like who I am now.
Oh.
It's like I have all these parts that were built for one purpose, these laser-focused eyes. But I don't like what I'm expected to do with them. But the part of me that rebels against it, I want to be that person.
What does that person want to do?
Just leave, I guess.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, if that's really what you want, if you're really not... not Moira anymore, I respect that. I want to respect that part of you, and I want to help you figure out what you want. And goddammit, Switch, if what you really want is to leave, we're going to get you out of here. Okay?
Switch finally makes eye contact with Safety. Something in her tightens.
Okay.
This is Tendril, the Banshee Chronicles. Episode 8, The Weeper Awakens. written by Caitlin Radel and Ryan Borses. The mother Jordok squirms and bucks in protest as Ensign Cade Fludry perches on the hollow between its spiny head and exoskeletal neck, just out of reach of its highly venomous tail. Cade brandishes his stun gun in fervor in this underground tunnel beneath the monumental capital city of New Havo. The Jordok was plotting the destruction of a civilization. If its eggs had been allowed to hatch in a day's time, its children would have tunneled until the whole city collapsed on top of them, ready to be devoured by their thousand-toothed, gnashing mouths. But not if the Banshee crew have anything to say about it. And, as it turns out, the Jordok is particularly weak to volts of electricity, which is why Cronist and Switch dive out of the way as their colleague shocks the Jordok into submission. And finally, with a crash and a splutter of lime green rotten egg acid, death.
Ha! Looks like I destroyed your world. Destroyer of worlds.
Slay!
Great job, newbie. Your first big bad kill.
Thanks. Although, I think I'd feel a bit more confident if you didn't call me newbie in the same breath as a compliment.
Alright guys, I've got the eggs secured on this hover cart. Let's be really careful not to jostle them too much on our way back to the Banshee.
Why? They might hatch?
Well, that, and because they're endangered.
With eggs in tow, the crew begins the long trek back to the ship.
So where are we keeping these?
In the freezer. Keeping them in below freezing temperatures will prevent them from incubating and hatching. Cases like this are why we have a walk-in freezer.
Oh!
What?
I honestly thought the freezer was to store all of your homemade ice cream.
That's what you'd think it was for, since it's all we ever keep in there.
Well, if literally anyone else helped me with the ice cream, maybe it wouldn't fill up the freezer.
No stomach, remember?
And I'm not a huge fan of sardine flavor.
Oh yeah? More for me, I guess.
Oh, shit!
Distracted by the conversation, Switch has tripped over an unevenness in the path, and the cart of eggs spills over. Several of the eggs wobble on the ground treacherously, then stop. Then, roughly half of them begin to wobble again, until the dangerous baby creatures spill out of their shells and begin to violently seek their first prey. Even having just hatched, they unfurl to the size of large dogs, albeit dogs with scales and gnashing, snarling teeth and striking deadly tails. The Banshee crew is soon surrounded by too many babies to count. Back to back, they ready their weapons.
Damn it, fire at will, crew.
They attempt to fight back the Jordok babies, but they are overwhelming in numbers. It's too much. Our heroes are backed into a corner. Is this the end? The ground rumbles. Several of the baby Jordoks flinch in confusion, and then, somehow having maneuvered through the tunnels itself, the Banshee appears, and Yorona, the onboard AI, screams over comms.
Get away from my children!
Triumphantly, the ship blasts the tiny Jordoks with her laser guns, creating burnt craters where they stood. Switch tosses herself in front of the remaining unhatched eggs.
Wait! They're endangered!
Yorona's firing comes to a stop. The smell of burnt chitin fills the air, and the Jordok corpses are curled up in balls all around the cavern. But some eggs have been spared. About 10. Switch gingerly places them back on the cart.
Okay, we're fine. Let's just gather what we can and get out of here.
Once on the ship, they strip off their hazmat suits and hang them in the decontamination chamber.
Welcome home, my children.
Thanks for the save, Mom Rona. How's that? It's a new thing I'm trying.
Well, I don't hate it.
I do.
I'm glad to see you all home in one piece. How was the mission?
The mission was fine. Yorona, was there a reason you acted on your own accord like that?
I don't understand. Isn't it my job to protect my children? Had I not intervened, you would all have been torn into tiny pieces.
Still, I'm concerned that these glitches of yours are starting to get out of control. Kate, will you take a look at her wiring later?
Sure. I'll just need to grab a snack
I do not need to be checked. I am doing just what I am supposed to be doing. I just love you all so much.
All right, Yorona. No need to get all like that. We'll figure this out.
Fine. Once you are ready and have checked my systems, don't forget to file your mission reports. I know how forgetful you all can be. Admiral Doyle and Drabo has scheduled a mission debriefing in approximately 1/2 hour.
Thanks, Yorona. Switch, you can go ahead and start yours. I'm gonna show Cade how we secure paraphernalia in the freezer. Let's go, newbie.
Alright, good luck finding room in there, boys.
Switch retreats to her quarters. She hops up onto a white ledge protruding from the wall, her charging station. The android conjures a holographic screen and begins to record her mission log. The room is stark white, completely undecorated. A closet is propped open to reveal a variety of clothing, the only personal touch in here. QN10, the little hoverboard, idles by the far wall and flashes his screen in a smiley face greeting as she enters the room.
Off to the quarantine, who will handle the re-releasing of the Jordok offspring on their home planet. All in all, a rather unexciting mission, which I hope will become the norm. Nothing further to report.
Switch begins to upload the report to the Tendril database, but it bounces back with an error.
That's weird.
She tries again, and this time it goes through without a hitch.
Yorona, can you get us to Earth? I'm just gonna stay in here for a little while.
Autopilot engaged for Tendril headquarters. You're welcome.
Thanks.
With no more work-related items to address, Switch settles in for the 12-hour trip. She opens the panel in her wrist and plugs her charging cord into the wall. Then, on her screen, she logs into her account for the popular fantasy MMORPG, Planet of Peacemaking. She queues up for a dungeon, but just as she finds a group, the screen begins to glitch, then goes black.
What? Oh, come on!
She tries to type in an override code, but the unchanging screen stares stoically back. Then, a single pop-up window appears. A video transmission. A grinning human face beams at her. His sharp metal teeth, the glinting visor of his metallic lower jaw, a stark contrast to his obsidian skin. His eyes glow like Switch's, but purple. Cybernetic plates are implanted in the left side of his shaved head. Wires exposed and tangled down the curve of his cheek. Switch draws into herself protectively, glaring with simmering hatred at the image of Trigger, her creator.
Moira, baby! Oh, why the long fat face? Why can't you perk up a bit and smile for your daddy? Or are you not in the habit of calling me daddy anymore? Well, that's just something, innit? It's been a long time since we've talked, love. Too long.
Switch glances downward. She refuses to give him the satisfaction of hearing her voice, of her acknowledgement.
Oh, and look at that uniform. The collar, the badges, everything. Have you been playing soldier all this time? Oh, what a nice change of pace. I never took you for the taking orders type, though. You know, even before the whole robot body thing, you never let me tell you what to do. Well, I'm even the guy in charge here at Harpy. Everyone listens to me, but never you. And I let you get away with it for the most part, eh? But surely you've had your fun by now, Got enough karma back on your side, sweetheart. Aren't you ready to come home? Nothing? No? Silent treatment, is it? Well, that's quite all right, love, because I've got something for you. A proposition, if you will. I think we'll be able to reach a fine agreement that will help us both. See, I've come upon some rather classified information. I happen to know about those Jordok eggs in the freezer room on your ship.
What?
Oh, that'll get you talking, huh? Yeah, I found out about your little mission. And as I'm sure you know, the eggshells on those babies can be ground up into a nice silky powder that packs a punch. Jordoks are pretty rare these days. And I'm sure we could get a pretty penny for that stuff on the black market. It would just help so much if you could get those to me.
Jordoks are a species protected by the
Oh, blah, blah, blah. Bureaucracy, just, I get it, alright. But, love, listen. People need their fix. We need the money. You've got the goods, so just pony up, yeah? Alright, what, so it's against your moral compass. Let me tell you, I didn't install that little gadget in you. I don't know where you got it, and it's a bloody shame. You made a good bodyguard and a better dance partner. And the fact of the matter is, Moira, I also know you have two, let's say, squishier life forms aboard that little tin can you call a ship. And, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't these your current coordinates?
Trigger holds up a little LED screen that, in fact, reads the exact coordinates of the Banshee's location.
What? How did you-
Bubba Chip put there on New Havo. Maybe that captain of yours needs to remember to lock the doors more securely.
You really think putting a tracker on my ship is gonna make me listen to you?
Not really. But I do think threatening that once you pass through the Jacuzzi belt on your way back to Earth, if you don't have a missing escape pod with at least one Jordark egg on it, en route to the coordinates I'll provide you, we are going to board your ship and raise everything.
We could take you. I've fought monsters worse than you in the last few.
You really think your tiny, inexperienced crew could take on Harpy? I mean, would you even want them to experience that? To see where you're from? I mean, sure, they've heard the rumors, but for them to actually know who you are, is that what you want?
Switch seethes for a moment, then takes a centering breath.
You just want the Jordark eggs.
As many as you can manage. Even one is fine.
And you won't hurt my crew?
Not a hair. I pinky promise.
Fine.
Really? You would do all this for them? And think, after everything I did for you, Moira, do you really care about them this much?
Frankly, it's none of your business. I'll get the job done.
Switch breaks the power cord on the back of her monitor, and it flicks off. She puts her hands over her face.
Shit.
Snianel Vice here with your Commonwealth Catch of the Day. Rumors have come in from our tip lines from our iTunes reviewers and Patreon supporters. You know us as the place where you can hear news from the coolest soda cans from all over the galaxy. Up top today, a new agent joins the ranks of Tendril, a mysterious glowing superhero known as the Stargate Pioneer, SP for short, emerged from a dimensional rift and confronted higher ups in the division. The plasma-charged warrior relayed dire portents, grotesque elder demons from his home dimension, eager to tear into our own. Though the travel-wary SP insists it's the apocalypse, it's not political. Critics have called the prophecies elitist, anti-prosperity, and socialist? Of course they did. Keep up the good fight, SP. Here's a story for you from planet Earth. Old Girl still has a few surprises. Horror buffs Aaron Mansfield and Derek Smith found themselves trapped in a slasher fic come to life when Aaron convinced his cowardly mate to watch an antique cursed VHS tape last evening. At the moment of the first kill, the ghoulish stalker from the film began knocking on their door. Now Derek and Aaron are hunted day and night, finding no sanctum from the monsters of their imagination. Should have paid attention to the label, boys. Watch if you dare, which happens to be the name of their podcast. If Derek and Aaron survive to produce another episode, you can follow their super fun horror film discussion podcast, Watch If You Dare, on any and all podcast platforms. It's time for us to part once again, dear listeners. As a final note, remember to always wear sun-blocking shades when you travel to the beach planet of Cowabunga 4, lest you burn your eyes out on the shore. See you next time on Commonwealth Catch of the Day! ¶¶
After showing Cade how to reorganize the freezer's ice cream contents to its fullest storage capacity, Cronus retreats to his own private quarters. He sits at his own desk, made of oak wood but worn by hundreds of years, and moves some leather-bound journals out of the way to bring up his own recording interface.
All right. Mission report, new half.
Cronus' head feels as though it is compressing in on itself. He sees inky black auras at the edge of his vision.
Why am I so cold?
Because, Cronus, you're in orbit.
Oh, yeah.
An ice-blue world rotates slowly beneath Cronus' all-seeing gaze. He knows that ice planets like this are abundant throughout the galactic territories, but this one is marked by a giant black crater, a solid third of its crust missing. This isn't a planet he recognizes. Not from his knowledge of Commonwealth territory, anyway. And it's definitely not civilized. Not a single docking station is in orbit, and through the angry storms grumpily thundering across this planet's atmosphere, not a lick of life can be seen. Except for the labyrinth. An angular maze cuts its path for miles in every direction on the crater, making its strained runic mark on the land. As Cronus' vision swoops inward to investigate what seems to be a variety of ants scuttling through, he can see that this labyrinth is etched into the very surface of this frigid planet, crystalline walls stretching impossibly downward into the ice. Upon further inspection, the ants are actually people, humanoid shapes hustling through a leg of the maze, decked out in heavy winter military gear. They duck under fallen crystal slags and weave around jutting protrusions, recklessly trundling down the extensive passageway. The runners are racing along, but staggering, exhausted. They glance back constantly, but nothing comes into view behind them. One trips on a stalactite, boom, flat on his ass. His gun goes off and the group scatters to escape the spray of plasma.
Hey! Everyone in one piece?
As good as we can be, boss.
The figure in front gesticulates wildly.
Come on, assholes, no time to waste. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
Don't even know where we're going.
One of them pulls out a holodock, holding it up for all to see. A map of the labyrinth, which spins in midair.
I think we're about here?
No way. We're all the way back here.
Oh, like you've been keeping track.
I can't believe you've done this again.
Well, if it
you always
for you,
do this.
Oh, we'd be back home by now.
One mercenary tackles another, and a wild brawl breaks out, limbs and teeth everywhere. Then one of them freezes mid-punch. Like, completely motionless. Fist cocked, jaw gaping with a halted scream.
What the?
The snowflakes around him arrest their flurry and stop, cold in the air. There is silence for a moment as the scuffle dies down, and the party moves in to see what the fuck. Then the frozen runner glitches. His whole body teleports a few inches back. Then to the right, then forward, then flickers rapidly in place for a few seconds until a horrid squelch fills the dead air.
Oh, my stars!
The body is still briefly before folding in on itself, keeling over at a smattering of unnatural angles, a cringeworthy contortion. What's left smacks the ground wetly. 3 feet away from the body is its skeleton, fully transposed outside of its fleshy home, matching the pose of its owner in a gross mimic of what was once life. The party stares in butt-clenching horror as the skeleton moves, picking up its hand to inspect it, before jolting violently. It falls, as well, in an abrupt clatter of bones. It's absolute chaos as some of them charge further down the trench. Others try to clamber up and out of it to the surface, and one sorts through the remains of the skeleton guy in disbelief. But their methods are no use. In rapid succession, the runners are all paralyzed by the unseen force. The storm around them becomes a time-locked diorama, and the bloodbath continues. The bodies zip and jig about in the same way as their comrades. Eyes bounce out of heads and roll downward into the labyrinth. A set of fingers breaks off and careens around in a pinwheel. A brain blasts off into the atmosphere as its nervous system pancakes into the snow. Muscles array themselves in a grotesque display of midair meat before someone else's kidney launches through and they burst like a bloody pinata. Within 20 seconds, the entire party is wiped, unmade, lying in a heinous pile of gore. Cronus notices that the holographic map has fallen to the ground in the hysteria, and, strangely disconnected from the events that just occurred, he moves in to inspect it.
Weird. It just looks like an old parchment scanned into a holodeck.
The map depicts a maddeningly complex web of tunnels, passages, obstacles, and traps, and it's covered in handwritten notes in multiple languages he's never seen before.
No wonder they got lost.
But at the center of it all is the kicker, what appears to be a big, empty sanctum within the maze-like sphere, in which the mapmaker has drawn the unmistakable image of a book sitting on a pedestal. The treasure at the end of the torture.
There it is! That's it!
He stands in front of the book, tentacles hovering in want above the yellowed pages. It's the real book, upon an altar in a round room of pristine, faceted crystal. It's shrouded in mist, as if Cronus isn't supposed to see it yet. But it tantalizingly floats above its platform. The pages fall open, slowly at first, then fluttering of their own accord, landing on an empty spread. A glowing blue-white scrawl makes its way across the top of the page, saying, "Oh shit. Hello, Cronist." Then the script continues, and a rhyming verse appears on the page. Cronist's whole body tingles, vibrating with energy as he reads it out loud.
"The treasure is yours, should you choose to claim. But stand you forward of Prometheus' flame. Knowledge and power snatched down from the gods can transform a mortal life, even all odds. To lift up a soul to the plane where we sing is to carve out its empathy, lose everything. You, who have only the dread prophecy, receive now your choice, to be doomed or be free. Destiny's plaything and fate's willing slave, or author of all things from cradle to grave, all in your will made corporeal, sublime. But pray you choose quickly, you have not much time."
As the final line leaves his lips, the page rips swiftly from its spine, flutters out of the book, and floats upward into a circular opening at the top of the room. The page combusts into brilliant blue light, streaking outward in a dozen directions. Cronus is knocked back, and he flies up, up and out of the chamber, out of the labyrinth, above the mountains, back into the violent clouds, and finally above the planet. He moves faster and faster, way beyond light speed, until he can see the entire galaxy star-charted in front of him.
Whoa, that was intense.
Cronus' supporting tentacles are tired from circling the star map, and he realizes that he is on the bridge of the Banshee. This is a map he has seen a million times before. Everyone has a galaxy map on the bridge, and it includes every planet in GAC space. But the planet he's looking for, he knows that blue planet of ice with its trademark crater marring the surface, is not in GAC territory. It hasn't been on any GAC map he's seen. So how can he find this map? How can he find this planet?
Oh, come on, it must be somewhere. I need to find it.
Cronus!
Cronus!
Help us!
Cronus! Cronus' gut curdles with dread. If he spends too long here, his crew will surely die.
But I'm so close.
Just as he reaches out to touch a specific sector on the map that he knows should contain the planet,
shit.
He's awake. Cade shuts a panel on the wall in the comms deck.
"Well, everything looks good up here. I'll have to go down to the AI core if I really want to see what's happening here."
"Cade, mijo, do you really want to do that? Wouldn't you rather be catching up on your cop dramas, sweetie?"
"Well, when you put it like that..." No, come on, Yorona. You can't convince me to just stop doing my job. I, like, just got Cronus to think I'm halfway competent.
But you already checked the system. You don't need to see the AI core. There's nothing there.
I've seen my fair share of cop dramas, as you mentioned, Mom. I mean, Yorona. Why do I keep doing that? Anyway, the fact that you're telling me to not go there just reeks of...
Incoming transmission from Admiral Doylan Drago.
With a crack of thunder, the Admiral's imposing holographic visage appears in the center of the room.
Yikes, Admiral Doylan Drago!
Yikes.
Sorry. We weren't expecting a transmission from you so soon. Hey guys, Admiral's on a call.
Good, Ensign. I don't have a lot of time. We'll have to do this debriefing quickly.
Okay, I'll do what I can.
I've skimmed your reports. The Jardock retrieval was normal.
Yes, ma'am.
And the eggs. They have been safely stored in the freezer of the ship?
Yes.
Perfect. Is there anything extra you'd like to report?
Well, there is something.
Admiral, the Lieutenant and I have just arrived. Is this an urgent call?
Coming behind Cronus is Switch, who is strangely quiet as she hovers near the comms deck.
Not urgent, just short. What were you about to say, Cade?
Well, Yorona took an action on her own free will.
She what?
It's true, Admiral. Yorona took the reins of the ship, drove into the Jardock tunnels, and used the cannons to blast an attack off of us.
If this is true, she has lost control of her maternal instinct. Are you sure this is what happened?
As sure as I'm green. She's been acting emotional, erratic.
She did save our lives.
You send them on this mission, so dangerous. Without me, it would have went horribly wrong.
You put them in even more danger than they would have been on their own. Understand, the AI we built is meant to fear the loss of her crew. But if she's acting violent, this puts you in an unprecedented amount of danger. She must be shut down. At least for now. Switch, Cade, I want you to go together into the AI core and...
Oh, please
don't do that to me.
Doylan Drabble's hologram flickers.
Be sure. What is happening? You cannot let Yorona take control like this. Something is wrong. She has contracted a virus or something worse if you cannot figure this out.
No!
The transmission cuts out completely.
Yorona, bring her back.
I do not know what you are referring to, Captain. We merely lost connection.
Are we in a dead zone?
Yes.
That's odd. We've never had trouble in this sector of the galaxy before.
How do we...
Cutting Cade off, the ship's lights dim and a panic alarm begins to blare. Red lights flash from the ceiling.
My children, I must call your attention to a ship who has come into our range of communication.
Why are the alarms going off? Are they dangerous?
I am unsure, but they appear to have been following us for some time.
I'm going to the bridge.
Switch is the first to stalk out of the room, her crewmates close behind. They go onto the bridge, where Switch now has access to her entire array of equipment and meters.
The ship is here on our radar, but I can't pull up a visual. It doesn't appear to be sending any signal at all. No distress.
Why didn't you tell us about them before, Yorona? Why wait until they're this close?
It did not seem important. I was monitoring the situation for you.
Yorona, send a transmission to these people. Ask them why they're following us.
Unnecessary, Captain. I have already deemed them a threat.
What?
They will stay away from my children!
Before anyone can even register what is happening, the ship shudders from the recoil of its external cannons, and the blip on the radar disappears.
Did you just fire at them?
I did what I had to do to protect my children.
Look, I know I called you Mom Rona, but you didn't have to take it seriously.
On the contrary, Cade. I was already your mother. You just haven't realized.
All right, this is getting out of hand. Cade, Switch, I suggest you do what the Admiral said and go down to the...
All three crewmates clap hands over their respective audio receptors, cringing from the terrible sound that emanates from every speaker on the ship.
There is no time to go to the AI Corps to fix me, Captain, for we are being boarded.
Seriously?
Weapons, now?
In near record time, they each don their bulletproof vests and arm themselves, then huddle in the shadows near the main hatch.
Did you hear the airlock? It'll only be a few seconds now.
Switch nods, and Cade gives a thumbs up. They wait for what feels like an eternity before the hatch swings open. As soon as the newcomers set foot onto the ship, the alarms stop and the lights flicker back on.
I don't know who you sick fucks think you are, but we are here to give you a piece of our minds.
Five figures step into the ship, still in their spacesuits of all differing alien shapes and sizes. The ones with hands are carrying enormous blasters, and the one at the front, clearly the leader, turns his head slowly, scanning the room.
That was some trick you pulled. Sending out a distress signal and then cutting it right before blasting our engines dead. Well, let me tell you. I don't know if you're pirates or what the hell you are, but I am going to sue you for so many things.
The leader reaches up to his helmet and presses the release button, taking it off his head to reveal a brown-skinned face that is handsome, adventure-ready, and crowned with flowing hair that is just messy enough to look rugged. From beneath his spacesuit, the edge of a flamboyantly red scarf peeks out. Cade steps out from cover.
Rafi?
Cade?
You! God, hot!
Oh, good. We shot his friend.
The Banshee Chronicles is written by Caitlin Radel and Ryan Borses. Tendril is created by Caitlin Radel, Ryan Borses, Taylor Finneran, and Brian Finneran. The theme song is written by Brian Finneran, and all additional music is written by Ryan Borses. This episode featured Ryan Borses as the narrator and Merc 2, Caitlin Radel as Switch, Eric Mayo as Cade Fledry and Merc 1, Teron Middleton as Cronist Lochnu and Typhius Markham, aka Trigger, Diane Mayo as Sasha Tokmakov, a.k.a. Safety, Admiral Doylan Drobel, and Merc 3. Monique Borses as Yorona, and Christian Inez as Ravi and Merc 4. Tendril is only possible through the enthusiastic support of our friends, family, and listeners. If you're interested in helping to make this podcast a reality, please visit patreon.com/tendrilpodcast and check out our range of rewards. For more information, as well as full transcripts of each episode, visit us at tendrilpodcast.com.